And you're listening to www.bix.org, WBAI Radio in Exile. And I have stuff.
Okay.
but you have stuff.
No, it's too late for my stuff.
Oh, okay. This stuff is courtesy of last night's meeting.
Oh, okay.
Let's see what we got here.
Thank you, and good evening. The folks have asked me to talk a little bit about what we in the Pacific Campaign see as what's going, where we are right now with this struggle, and to fill those of you who may not have been keeping up with all the various listservs on what have been some of the main things that have been occurring in the last couple of months and what it looks like heading into this plan September 19 board meeting of Pacifica. I'm sure that many of you here are aware of a good deal of the aspects of what's been happening, but clearly after the resignations of some board members in June, when the Renegade board majority was reduced to just one of a 6-5 majority, there were great hopes that the rest of them would cave immediately, and that there would be some kind of a quick victory or negotiated exit for them. However, and we've discussed this quite a bit among the staff of the campaign, and everyone has their own analysis of what's gone on. But what appears to me to have happened was that once Acosta and Van Putten and then Andrea Sisco resigned, you basically had a board of directors without a chairman, without a secretary, without a treasurer, and with only one officer left, Ken Ford, who didn't want to assume any other position. We've discovered that there has not been as much communication between these board members on a daily basis as there's been on the movement. So in essence, you had a dysfunctional board at that point, but one still clinging to power. In the absence of that center of direction from the board, Betsy Wash and the station managers, in essence, I've characterized it as a coup, pulled off a coup within a coup. You know how sometimes the first group of generals take over a country, but they're not dictatorial enough, so then a group of younger generals seize the power from them. So what ended up happening was that Betsy Wash saw the whole thing collapsing and saw a board that was dysfunctional, so she immediately called a two-day meeting of her station managers in Washington, D.C., immediately after the court defeat, and I forget when it was, in July, coming out of that meeting, they immediately fired Epstein, Becker, and Green, because Epstein, Becker, and Green had apparently decided that it was better to negotiate a resolution of the conflict, and Betsy didn't want a resolution of the conflict. And they got a new public relations firm and a new law firm. And the new public relations firm and the new law firm are not minor players in corporate America. These are really top gun operations. The West Hill Partners I know well because we confronted them 10 years ago at the Daily News strike when John Scanlon was the main, who was now deceased, but then was the head of West Hill Partners, was the main PR representative for the Tribune Company, trying to convince the rest of America that the Daily News strikers were a bunch of violent-prone, racist, and a variety of other evils. They have also, as people know, represented Brown and Williamson Tobacco Company. They've represented Kerry when he got into his belated scandal over the Vietnam massacres, and they even represented Jesse Jackson, not when he was doing a lot of the good stuff he's done, but when all of the recent scandals surrounding him began to surface. Robert Rubin, who's the former Secretary of the Treasury, personally suggested to Jesse that he hire West Hill to clean up his image. So this is a major damage control corporate public relations firm in America. These are not little leaguers like the others that they've used in the past. And, of course, Williams & Connolly is a top corporate law firm. That meant, but subsequent to that, enormous divisions developed within the board. Some of you probably heard of this, or other people can give you better sense of it. I see Leslie is here. She probably has a much better sense of it than I do. But fractions started developing within this, in the Den of Thieves. And so you had a situation where Bob Farrell, the board member from Los Angeles, declared himself an independent, a would-be Jeffords, you know, who was willing to sell his vote, his swing vote, to whoever would make him chairman of the Pacifica board. Some of the board members are represented by Williams & Connolly, and the foundation is represented by Williams & Connolly, but some are not represented by Williams & Connolly, so they obviously disagreed with the hiring of the firm, and Farrell has his own representation. So there is increasing infighting within this bare majority of six. We began to discuss in the campaign, once we got a sense of what was going on, and also that they were now refusing to have any kind of negotiations or sit down with any of the folks, the plaintiffs in the reform movement, that there was only one person that needed to be gotten off of there. We should keep trying to pressure to get somebody off that board, or to see if it was possible to turn one of them, not in the unprincipled way that Farrell wanted to turn, but maybe in something that would be more, something that would at least begin a transition to a democratic accountability. So we continued both the pressure, and we put enormous pressure on Valerie Chambers in Houston, and continued to do some of the protests against the National Association of Home Builders, and while at the same time we tried to explore the possibility of breaking somebody off. And a couple of weeks ago, Ursula and Bokeem from the Pacifica campaign went down to Houston and personally met with Valerie Chambers, attempted to try to explain to her in detail what the resistance movement was about, and to dispel whatever viewpoint she might have had. In retrospect, it was not successful. Her position was she would only be willing to resign when someone else from Texas was there on the Pacifica board to represent Texas. But there were clearly disagreements between her and Utrice Lead and Bessie Wash. She said Bessie Wash didn't communicate with her at all. But she was not ready to break with the majority. Subsequently, though, she did take a very important stand on the Democracy Now! Crisis, in that at least she recognized that what was happening to Amy and Democracy Now! was indefensible. And so on that particular issue, she did join with the dissidents to issue an order to Bessie Wash and to the other folks to allow Democracy Now! To continue to broadcast from an outside venue while this whole issue of the safety of Democracy Now! Staff was being addressed. So that was an important break. It's not a complete break, but, you know, sometimes, you know, little steps can lead to bigger steps. And it was important at least that she began to see those people who were picketing outside her house and raising all kinds of scandals in terms of problems that she had as human beings who had deep felt beliefs, and that she at least needed to sit down and address them. There is also, other people have made attempts. I think this weekend some other people are meeting with Bert Lee in an attempt to sit down with him in D.C. and to try to see if there's any way to break his perspective and viewpoint. And as I guess as part of that, I received a call on last Friday from Jonathan Lubell, a well-known civil rights attorney who's been assisting Amy in her battle with Democracy Now, that Lubell had reached out to Craig, the chief attorney for the major new law firm that is representing Pacifica, and that Craig had agreed to come to New York to meet with him, and that Lubell thought that it would be a good idea for a couple of people to be there, that Craig did not know they would be there, but that he thought that he would not object, and see if some other attempt could be made to see where the Pacifica Board was trying to go. So yesterday afternoon, myself and Mimi Rosenberg and Lubell met with Greg Craig for a couple of hours and basically to put out our perspective and position on what was going on. Craig indicated that the new law firm did want to seek a resolution of this conflict and was willing to start negotiations next week before the board meeting, the scheduled board meeting September 19th. We passed the information on to the plaintiffs in California and other places this morning, and I don't know what's happened from there on in. But there does seem to be a new willingness by this law firm to bring their clients to some kind of a negotiation. He made it clear, and as he would as a representative of his clients, that he is not negotiating their surrender. He's negotiating a resolution, but that's how you start a negotiation process, if there is going to be one. He made it clear that if there's any window of opportunity left to resolve this, it has to be done before September 19th. I made it clear to him that if Pacifica attempts or does try to hold a meeting on September 19th to pack five more board members onto that board, that we will regard that akin to Nixon's bombing of Cambodia. We will see it as an escalation of the war, and we will necessarily then have to respond with a much more developed and organized campaign. And that we don't want that, because we understand that every day this continues, Pacifica hemorrhages more and more people get fired, the network increasingly loses listeners. I don't know how many of you have seen this email that's floating around. It is purportedly an angry email written by Mark Cooper of KPFK to Stephen Yaskel, but basically blasting him and attacking Bessie Wash and basically taking the position that the network is collapsing. And it's collapsing financially, and it's collapsing in public image and everything else, and that Yaskel and Bessie Wash are the cause of it all. And this is from one of the people who's involved in it. So you can see this enormous infighting among them as they try to hold up their position. And we've begun to discuss in the campaign, and we're hoping we're going to have a meeting next week of the campaign to adopt a plan for what would happen if we do have to escalate the struggle. And we've been discussing this now for several weeks, and I've been proposing, because one of the things I think we have to understand, those of you who've been involved in mass movements like this one know, movements have their ebbs and flows. You cannot keep doing the same thing on a constant level, because sooner or later the numbers will start to dwindle. You must continue to change and have creative approaches. So that one of the things that I've proposed, and it's not decided yet, and it may be amended and changed, but I believe in encouraging conversation and discussion and public debate over tactics and strategy before they happen, not after they're adopted. I propose that we announce before the September 19th board meeting that if Pacifica does decide and does successfully put five people on the board, and I do not think that that is a settled question. I don't think the meeting is a settled question because the judge may still, in a hearing on September 13th, put it back. And there may be negotiations beforehand that also postpone it. But in case the worst case scenario occurs, and you must always hope for the best but prepare for the worst, that we in the Pacifica campaign should begin to think in much bigger, long-range terms, something I was hoping we wouldn't have to do, and that we should set ourselves a goal and announce it beforehand, that we will raise $3 million in the next year to fight Pacifica. And that we would raise that $3 million to do basically three different things. One, we would establish, together with other groups, it's been talked about quite a bit, but no one's implemented it, we've got to figure out how to implement it. We would establish a national escrow fund. And we would seek to raise pledges of at least $1 million from listeners that escrow fund will not be touched and not be released to Pacifica until this board is out. And it will be used as seed money to begin the rebuilding of Pacifica. That at the same time, we would take another $1 million to use it to begin to cobble together an independent people's network. In the eventuality that this struggle lasts much longer than we anticipate, or in the eventuality that we are not successful, I think we will be successful, but you always have to prepare for the worst, that we would begin now to cobble together an independent people's network, that we would take Free Speech Radio News, which right now is being aired on 41 different community radio stations around the country, that we would take the model that Errol and others have developed in WBIX in exile, and we would create an exile station in every one of the Pacifica listening areas. There would be with a van and a studio and internet streaming. There would be a KPFT in exile, a WPFW in exile, a KPFX in exile. We wouldn't need one in Berkeley, at least not now. But we would actually begin and use those to begin to recruit young people and train them in radio and other people who are interested in radio. Anybody who wants to produce radio would be trained to learn how to do it. And basically to use the model that Pacifica really was founded on, of volunteers who are interested in using radio as a means of educating and expanding the consciousness of the American people. And that on September 19th, if the board does successfully get put these five people on, that our alternate network would make an offer to Democracy Now! To leave Pacifica, and that together with Democracy Now!, the Pacifica Radio, the Free Speech Radio News, and the local stations in exile, we would begin to try to disseminate and also provide employment opportunities to all of these banned and fired people. Because it's, you can pick it and you can demonstrate so many times a week, but if there's no outlet for the creative abilities and the news gathering abilities and the cultural critique abilities of these folks, after a while part of you begins to die. The creative part of you begins to suffer. So that this would provide an opportunity, and we would use $1 million to begin cobbling together this alternate network, which would always be geared to battling Pacifica and getting Pacifica back in the hands of the people. And then the third $1 million would be to continue the organizing, the boycotts of the regular stations, the mass mailings, the demonstrations, the legal defenses that occur from that, and so forth. But in essence, that would be what we're going to be discussing. It'll probably be amended, it'll probably be changed, and some of it may be thrown out. But we're thinking, if we do have to go beyond, and if we announce this beforehand, if we let Pacifica know that, if we announce it the week that they're having their board meeting, if you do this, this is going to be our response, right? They will be on notice. The law firm will be on notice. Everybody will be on notice that nobody is going away. No one is going away. There will be no peace. You know, no justice, no peace. There will be no peace in the stations of Pacifica until this clique and these renegades resign. So that... I'm an eternal optimist. I still have hope that between now and September 19th, we can have a sufficient impact to get them to see reason and to see that they've got to stop the hemorrhaging of this network. We have to stop the hemorrhaging of this network by restoring democratic accountability and free speech to the network. One last thing I want to talk about, and I know Amy is here, and you want to hear from her. I'm sure there are other people that need to talk. I know that there's been a lot of uproar the past few days about a posting that we put up in the Pacifica campaign about the Yasco website. And some people have been very upset about it, other people haven't, but I want to address it, and maybe Amy can address it more because she felt it more directly. And I had an exchange of cordial but strong emails with Carol Spooner today over this issue. I think that I heard about this on Sunday night. A Pacifica activist, had found this website and immediately sent an email to it basically telling Yasco Free Pacifica or something to that. And then that activist alerted us staff in the campaign over the weekend, and I heard about it on Sunday night. It was described to me by people who had spent all day Saturday downloading it, and checking it out, and verifying what it was about, and downloading information on it. When I heard about it, and I heard that somebody had already sent an email to Yasco about it, I was afraid that he was going to take it down immediately. I've not looked at the website myself, but I've had lots of descriptions of it, and I felt that that it was important to alert people to it so that they could make their own judgments, so they could visit the website in case it did go down, and it did go down today, so that they could make their own judgments about what they saw. And what our assessment of it, of the Pacifica campaign people who saw it, felt that it was that it had nothing to do with the fact that it was that it was a gay website, but that it was a website that was denigrating to women, and especially there was postings on that specifically had sexual fantasies about Amy. Given the fact that Steve Yasco is her employer and her supervisor, and that he right now is facing gender harassment grievances from Amy, the fact that even on a private website that he would allow detrimental stuff about one of his employees to be posted to us was something that the movement should know about, and that we felt that in any grievance case that it was something that would demonstrate the kind of attitudes that Yasco had toward women. So that's why we posted it. I understand there's been a lot of people are upset about it. They think that it's, our criticism is homophobic and against free speech. And I don't believe so. I do believe in the wording of the release of the alert, that we could have used better wording on some of the references to it. But I think overall it was meant to alert to the fact, everyone to the fact, because it was, some of the stuff was so unbelievable that unless you actually saw it, you wouldn't believe it. So that's why we figured let people check it out for themselves. But you know, we're always going to have differences in the movement about tactics or what to do. I take responsibility for the directive to put it out there to people. I didn't write the memo or investigate the website myself, but I made the call. And so if there's criticism, I'll take it. But I think it was important to do it. And the fact that Yasco has already pulled it down, and that the lawyers, Amy's lawyers, have already filed additional complaints in relationship to it, demonstrate that it was important to get it out. So that's it. I think we're going to... I still think we're going to win, but I have to urge you, just as the longer this struggle develops, just as they will develop more and more infighting on their side, they will develop more infighting and more conflict on our side. So we have to be doubly vigilant to understand that we're going to have differences, we're human beings, we're going to make mistakes. Some people are going to, I've heard things said and done in some of these meetings that I have like cringed at and saying, hey, these people aren't my son. But, you know, that happens. Everyone comes from a different perspective. But we have to keep sight of the overriding goal and the overriding direction. Our movement is standing for what's right in this battle. And yes, we're going to make mistakes, and when we make mistakes, we should own up to them. Nobody has a monopoly on purity in this battle. But that we got to maintain our sense of unity and our real unity to be able to win. Thank you.
And you're listening to